Good afternoon, folks. This is Will Aitchison with Labor Relations Information System. I'm happy to be hosting another in our series of podcasts where we interview some of the leading practitioners in public safety labor relations from around the country who've been involved in a case that is of some significance. And boy, you really can say that about the person we're going to interview today and a case, or actually a couple of cases, that come out of the small town of Hutchinsons, Kansas. Let me start by introducing Steve Bucati, who's been representing law enforcement labor organizations in the Kansas area for some time. Welcome, Steve, to our podcast.
Hi, Will.
Steve, will you start by giving us a little bit of your background? How long have you been representing law enforcement labor organizations, and how did you tumble into this business?
Well, I started in 1976 with the largest union-side labor firm in the state of Kansas, and in 1981 started representing FOP locals here in Kansas Patrol Police, and it eventually grew to the point where I, at one time or another, represented every FOP local in Kansas, plus several in Missouri, and have over the years even represented officers who are not represented by any union. And I've done a lot of private sector labor relations, collective bargaining, arbitrations, but in the last 10 years or so, I would say the bulk of our practice is now representing police officers and some firefighters.
So you have been standing by watching as the Brady Rule has come to Kansas, right?
I have.
And tell us roughly when that happened and whether or not there was sort of a organized and methodical reaction to it from local governmental bodies.
Well, you know, as you know, Brady and Giglio have been around since the 60s and 70s. But I think one of the things that really started this renewed emphasis on them, or actually, in my opinion, this first-time emphasis, was the Senator Ted Stevens case up in Alaska, where his conviction was thrown out because of alleged improprieties by the prosecutors, including failing to disclose quite a bit of information about one of the star prosecution witnesses. And the Justice Department started putting out memos about the effect of that and how U.S. attorneys need to act. Our U.S. attorney here, I think, overreacted and started putting on seminars, scaring local police chiefs and district attorneys and county attorneys here in Kansas that, boy, this could be a huge problem and your prosecutions could get thrown out. And they've overreacted to it. In fact, we wrote a paper last year dealing with actually some cases that came out of Wichita, which we entitled the overreaction or hysteria involving Brady Giglio. So that's kind of the genesis of what's led to what's gone on here in Kansas, I would say, the last 5 or 6 years.
And I do want to get to what happened in Wichita, because I think it's just as important as these Hutchinson cases, but let's start with Hutchinson.
Okay.
Tell us what was going on I guess there were two cases, right?
Two arbitrations. There were three officers who were investigated, and I'll try to make it short. One of the officers had a complaint made against him by a female that he arrested for a DUI, and quite frankly, he was hitting on this girl, and he ended up resigning. The other two officers were called into internal affairs and were asked real vague questions. Did this guy ever make inappropriate comments to you? Well, he had at one time told them both that he had gotten oral sex from this woman. They both thought he was joking, and he told internal affairs that he was joking. It never happened. Long story short, while he was being interviewed, he texted these two other officers and said he was in trouble. The officers, when they were interviewed, said they hadn't received any text messages from him. One of those officers, the one who, you know, we got two arbitration decisions, both of which found these two officers were wrongfully terminated. In the decision that spent more time discussing Brady Giglio, the officer or the arbitrator basically said that, you know, if he was dishonest, it was very minor. All he said was he didn't receive a text message, which didn't have any impact on any investigation or anything else. And another thing we had in our favor was an officer a few months, about 8 months before that, had received a reprimand for basically lying about having prepared reports he didn't prepare, and he got a reprimand. And that was one thing that really impressed both arbitrators, was the disparate treatment nature of this. These guys are covered by a contract that requires just cause for discipline. So,
I only read one of the arbitrator's decisions, and I should note for our audience here that very, very few arbitration decisions are ever published.
Yeah.
There are only three or four national publication outfits. I picked up on this case through what's known as the Labor Arbitration Reporter, which is published by the Bureau of National Affairs.
Right.
And it only published one of the two cases, and it only referred to the officer, as all BNA arbitration disciplinary cases do, by his initial. I only know him as Officer M.
Right.
And as I understand it, Officer M went into an interview about whether or not, well, about everything that the officer who resigned told him, and was asked up front, did you receive any text messages, and lied about it. But then something happens later in the interview that has a big impact on the arbitrator, right?
Sure. Within 15 minutes, he said, well, I did get a text message from you. And of course, one of the many things, well, was the text message was nothing. The text message just said, I'm in trouble. I'm being investigated based on allegations by this woman. So, I mean, there wasn't any big smoking gun or anything in this text message. But that was one thing the arbitrator very much focused on, because they allegedly fired him for dishonesty. And the arbitrator said, well, wait a minute. You know, he, in the same interview, before that interview was over, you knew everything he knew. So,
And what happened with it? What happened with the other officer when he went through his interview?
Well,
did he have a change of heart as well?
Well, he never admitted that he lied, and the facts were slightly different, and they didn't. And one of the things that this department violated its own policies, it didn't tape record the sessions. So there was a dispute in that one about what was said. And the arbitrator in that case never found as a fact that the other officer had lied, which was one of the many issues he relied on. But he in essence said, even if he had lied, you have this other officer 6 months earlier who got a reprimand, and you know, and you can't fire this guy for alleged minor dishonesty when a guy that lied about having done reports didn't get any major discipline. That arbitrator did not spend as much time discussing Brady Giglio as our arbitrator in Officer M's case.
Now, let's talk about this decision in Officer M's case,
okay,
because I found there to be kind of three core points to the arbitrator's decision. You've talked about the first one, which is the officer almost immediately recanted his lie.
Yep.
And the arbitrator ends up, I think, very obviously impressed by that fact, and I thought it was very important. The second thing, though, that the arbitrator addresses, I thought was pretty fascinating, and I'd love you to elaborate on it. And that was that a captain either testified or took the position in the administrative proceedings that, look, this guy has lied. He's lied in an internal affairs investigation. How can I ever trust him again? And the arbitrator had a few words about that position, didn't he?
Yeah, he basically said there's no psychological study or scientific evidence to show simply because someone tells a lie about some insignificant fact that they are someone that will always lie in the future and be untrustworthy. And he went in, we spent a lot of time in the arbitration pointing out the guy had a fabulous record. He'd got numerous commendations, including some commendations dealing with integrity. And the arbitrator specifically quoted those in his decision. So you're absolutely right. He kind of let that captain have it that somehow. And it was, and the other thing that along those lines, well, remember that in this case, he said, look, if you call it a lie, that's fine. But all he was trying to do was protect someone he didn't want to see get in trouble. He didn't do this for personal gain. He didn't do this to cover up anything he had done. And by contrast, this other officer who got the reprimand 8 months before had lied to protect himself because he was getting in trouble for not having done reports.
Now we come to the real meat of this arbitrator's decision in Officer M's case, which is Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Because kind of the overwhelming thing, I think, at least reading the arbitrator's opinion, overwhelming thing that the employer is saying here is, hey, this guy's on a Brady list. We got a letter from a prosecutor, and we don't really care what it is you do, Mr. Arbitrator. We can't reinstate this guy. We can't use him. And the arbitrator goes on, I think, Steve, at greater length yeah. than any arbitrator I've seen about Brady. Tell us about it.
Well, first of all, you know, he said that the district attorney didn't say he can't use him. He said he may not use him. But the other thing, several things that this arbitrator did, we submitted a brief in which he asked us to address Brady Giglio. And, you know, I assume your audience knows that any time that there is a supposed Brady Giglio issue, three things are supposed to happen. First of all, the prosecutor is supposed to advise the judge that there may be material that needs to be disclosed to the other side. Then, and you can ask the judge for an in-camera inspection to make a determination as to whether it ever gets turned over. And even if the judge decides it has to be turned over to the other side, that does not mean it's ever going to be admitted into evidence. The prosecutor can file a motion in limine, and among the many things the defense counsel has to show is that it's relevant material. And the prosecutor didn't address any of those steps in his little two-sentence letter saying, I'm not going to use this guy as a witness. And it's also interesting, the prosecutor wrote that letter before the investigation was completed. But we also have a statute in Kansas that is very specific, that says, in essence, and rather than give you the essence, I'll try to give you the quote, that evidence of specific instances of witnesses' conduct relevant as to tending to prove a character trait are not admissible. And what our Kansas Supreme Court has said is, you know, may attack somebody's credibility, but you can't bring in specific instances other than convictions, which you contend affect that credibility. So under Kansas law, this evidence of this so-called lying in internal affairs is not admissible. And, of course, the prosecutor didn't address any of these things in his little two-sentence letter. And the arbitrator relied heavily on that to say, well, this is bogus.
And I think you see this going on in a lot of places around the country right now. And by this, I mean that a prosecutor gets notice of something that potentially might have Brady or Giglio implications, and really, without thinking it through, simply places an officer on a Brady list.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now let's turn to Wichita and what happened in... Okay. By the way, before we leave Hutchinson, has the employer complied with these decisions, or what's going on?
The employer has not complied with either decision, even though they were directed to reinstate both officer with back pay and seniority and so forth. We are in district court in Hutchinson right now. We have a statute in Kansas that gives us authority to challenge a decision like this by any governing body. The decision was upheld by the city council and was a total political decision. And we're in court right now, and, you know, I never predicted it could happen in court, but I think from a legal standpoint, we have a very strong case. So they do have just cause protections under the contract. As you saw in the decision with Officer M, this arbitrator wrote, a 30-page decision in which he was very articulate in setting out the reasons why they failed to prove just cause. So, in fact, we have our initial brief to the district courts due, I think, the end of next week. So those cases are proceeding through district court. And the FOP is totally backing these guys, and we believe ultimately we will prevail and they'll be back to work.
Do you have the same standard in Kansas that applies in a lot of places in the country on the finality of arbitrators' decisions that I could shorthand as an arbitrator can be wrong on the facts and wrong on the law and will still have their opinion upheld unless there's some underlying violation of public policy or fraud?
Well, here in Kansas, unfortunately, we have two types. We have final binding arbitration, which the standard you just articulated is upheld or enforced by the courts. The other is where the arbitrator's decision is in effect advisory, and in this case, the city manager and the city council had the final say, but we still have a statute in Kansas that says they have to follow the law. Their decision can't be arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to the evidence. And based on all of those, we think that a district court will reinstate these arbitrators' decisions because they're so well-reasoned and there were no legitimate reasons given by the city for not complying with them.
Well, definitely keep me posted on this.
We will.
And let's move over to Wichita.
Okay.
Wichita's a little bit different in that it's not a particular case. It's a whole policy that became the focus of attention, right?
Right. Yeah, under this policy, there were really about 20 officers who were affected. They were removed from certain assignments. They were prohibited from working off duty. They were prohibited from competing for promotions. This list was put together by an internal affairs captain who has been the most extreme in Kansas in overreacting to Brady Giglio. The big hammer was in, we have probably the strongest police union in the state in Wichita. They failed to bargain over any of these changes, and these people had rights by contract to the positions they were in and the right to bid assignments and all of these things. They were denied also the right to bid specialty assignments like SWAT and the mounted unit and so forth. We filed unfair labor practices and we filed an arbitration, and we actually proceeded for 2 days in the arbitration. The only witness to testify was this internal affairs detective captain who overreacted to all this. After I cross-examined him for a day and a half, the arbitrator called the timeout, made them bring the police chief, and just very bluntly told him, unless I hear something different than what I've heard from your evidence, I'm going to have to rule against you. Why don't you try to settle this? We eventually did settle it, although it took quite a while. They agreed to rescind the entire policy and to bargain with us over it. And all of the guys were reinstated to their positions, their eligibility for promotions and for specialized units was restored, and they were paid a pretty decent amount of back pay.
And what has happened since then? Do you have a policy in place that's been bargained?
I tell you, you never know how the worm's going to turn. You will find this amazing. The police chief, who quite frankly I always liked, he was there for 14 years, but like any chief, had his blind spots. He resigned because it came out that he was on the Giglio list, and that was hidden from everyone for about 10 years. So, it goes around, comes around.
Are you kidding me?
Not in the least. And we don't have a new police chief yet. They are still in the interview stage. There have been no negotiations. The attorney who was doing the negotiations for the city against my, well, not so much against, we were negotiating with her and the police chief. She has left to seek other employment. So the city's dropped the ball, and the police union's position is, we have no Brady policy. These guys can all do what they want. So we're not going to push the envelope. They have to come to us. So that's kind of where we are. Although we were making progress in the negotiations, but there was no final agreement. So as of today, Wichita has no Brady Giglio policy at all.
Well, I'll tell you, Steve, this is the first time I have heard of litigation over the negotiability of a Brady Giglio policy. Part of me wants to tell you, congratulations, you got the result you want. And part of me wants to tell you, I'm sorry you did, because I would have loved to have seen a decision on the negotiability of a Brady Giglio policy.
Well,
now you're claiming it's negotiable. Why?
Well,
what makes it a mandatory subject to bargain?
The fact that all these people were disciplined and that their contractual rights to promotions, to off-duty employment, and the bidding rights were unilaterally taken away. So. And the arbitrator agreed with us that because of all those particulars, they had to, if they wanted to do those things, they had to sit down and bargain with us. They just couldn't unilaterally say, you're no longer eligible for promotion guaranteed you by contract. You're no longer eligible to bid on these positions under the bidding procedure of the contract. You're no longer eligible to walk off duty, although that's covered by the contract. So that was the reason we were able to force them to negotiate, was they were clearly changing terms and conditions of employment.
And I had a question. I read your, you wrote, I think, an excellent summary of the Wichita experience, which we'll post on our webpage along with your CV. I had a question, though,
okay.
After reading it.
Okay.
So let's say you've got someone who, I assume there's a part-time SWAT team in Wichita, right?
It is.
Okay. And was the SWAT team one of the teams where if you were placed on a Brady list, you'd be ineligible to be in that assignment?
Correct.
So let's say you had a patrol officer who wanted to be on the SWAT team, got placed on the Brady list. Would that person still be allowed to be a patrol officer?
Yes.
And what was the rationale then for not allowing them to go on the...
Oh, yeah.
What am I missing?
Well, you should have heard the testimony of this internal affairs captain. And, you and I go way back. I've been trying cases for 40 years. I had a lot of fun cross-examining this guy because I pointed out those type of inconsistencies. In fact, in some of these specialized units, for example, another one was a team program they called SCAT, was one of their street units that goes out in high crime areas, and when they flood an area that's had a lot of violence or drug activity. And SCAT always operates in teams, so you're always going to have another officer who could back up your testimony. And plus, now we're going to, the city council just voted for cameras for everyone. So the rationale, it was not logically thought through at all. In fact, we showed that some of the patrolmen would be more likely, the SWAT guys hardly ever testify. Yet a patrolman could be called to testify on a regular basis based on arrests he made, reports he did, all those kind of things. It was crazy.
Yeah, I'm kind of reminded of, I think it's Emerson who said it, that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds. sounds like that's at work here. Hey, I want to close on a personal note,
okay.
Steve, because as you mentioned, you and I go way back. I think you've been doing this just a little bit longer than I have. And I just want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Is there anything more enjoyable in your professional life than cross-examination?
Oh, probably not, but because you and I do some similar things, and when you win a case for a cop or a firefighter, don't you feel really good? Or when you negotiate a contract for them or you get them a decent pay raise and some additional rights they didn't have before, you feel awful good. But I love to do cross-exam, but you got to do your homework, you got to be prepared. But I think the final result on a lot of these things, and I do a lot of arbitrations, as you know. I've got two more coming up recently, discharge cases. And you work your tail off, but boy, if you can get that cop his job back, don't you feel good?
You feel wonderful. And you try not to elevate it, right?
Yeah.
But you do go home feeling a little bit better than you otherwise would. And Steve, I do want to second something that you said, and this is for anybody who's out there thinking about this sort of career, whether on management or labor side. You win these cases by preparing.
Oh,
for
them. Boy.
How you behave, how you act in a courtroom or in an arbitration setting, that matters. I'm not going to pretend that doesn't matter and that some people are better at it and some people are not as good at it, but the essence of it is you are the best prepared person in the room, right?
You're absolutely. I'll tell you a real quick story. I had a sheriff's deputy in yesterday who's facing discipline. We're going to do the hearing for him. And I told him what I tell all my clients. I can't guarantee you will win. Here's my one guarantee. When I walk into that hearing room, there will not be another person in the room that knows the facts of this case as well as I do. And
including you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, folks, that's Steve Buchady and fighting the fight there in Kansas. And Steve, thank you so much for participating in the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome.
I look forward to seeing you
somewhere.
Yeah,
I hope we see each other soon. Well, you do a great job, and I've been going to your seminars for 30 years. So you're one of the leaders in our movement. So I appreciate it.
How can How can you be going to my seminars for 30 years when I'm 42 years
Yeah,
old?
I know. Well, because you were one of those child prodigies who graduate from college very young.
There we go. Hey, thanks, Steve. Have a good
You too.
afternoon.
Well, bye.
Bye.